At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This episode of Writing Excuses is brought to you by Audible. Visit audiblepodcast.com/excuse to start your free trial membership.
Season 9, Episode 52.
This is Writing Excuses, from the page to the stage.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Howard.
I'm Mary.
I'm Dan.
Brandon's missing, and he's missing because we have two special guests this week. Allison Hill and C. Austin Hill, who I have been led to understand are doing an adaptation of a Dan Wells book.
That Who's is Dan correct. Wells?
We never I'm say Dan the last the name. End.
Oh, you.
Yeah. Yes, this is actually my sister and her husband. They live in Tennessee. She runs a children's theater. He is a theater professor, and As one of her projects, she has taken my vampire comedy, A Night of Blacker Darkness, and we're converting that, adapting it as a stage play. And we thought, this is too perfect. Let's do an episode about stage adaptation.
I love it. Okay, so from a structural standpoint, just for the discussion, I want to start with the theory of this. Mm-hmm. The title of the episode, From the Page to the Stage, that's an actual thing that theater people say.
That's right.
Yes.
What is the theory behind this? What are your guiding principles? Where do you start? I mean, besides starting with a great book.
You start with the page, and you'll end with the stage.
Yes, that's generally what you do. First thing you have, like you say, you have to start with a great book. And Night of Blacker Darkness, when you read it, everybody says, oh, this has to go on the stage. So it was a no-brainer. But the first thing that you have to do is a book, you may have noticed, is very, very long, and plays are not. And so you have to cut it down. So you have to look at what is important in the book, not just plot-wise, but character-wise, character development-wise.
Theme,
motives, all of these things that have to go from the book to the stage. Also, you have to look at what is playable on stage that reads really well in a book but does not read on stage.
Okay. There's a
Mary painful. Mary made this big nodding gesture when you said what is playable on the stage. Is there a story?
Oh, there's so many stories. But but one of the things that I was also thinking as she was, it was the nodding gesture was actually the sentence prior to that, which was when you were going through the elements that the audience expects to see. So when you're doing an adaptation, one of the things that you want is for the audience to come out of the theater feeling like they have seen the book. So frequently when you're doing children's theater or puppetry or adult theater, you're doing an adaptation because you're trying to play off the popularity, honestly.
That's not a concern with my book.
Yeah. Not always, but
you've got a following. More so in my town, thank you very much.
But often that's the case. So when they come to see the show, they need to leave the theater feeling like they have actually seen, like if they come to see Pinocchio, they need to feel like they have actually seen Pinocchio. So part of what you're doing is you're identifying the iconic elements of the thing, which includes the tone, the characters, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't, depending on the type of adaptation, that does not always mean that you have to do a direct linear translation onto stage, and frequently a direct linear translation onto stage will fail badly.
The yes. brilliant theater writer and theorist Peter Brook, in his book The Empty Space, talks at great length about adaptation, and he talks about changes in form. He talks about when you take something that's in one artistic form and you make it into another artistic form, like a book to a play, or a book to a film, or any other sort of adaptation, there are necessary changes in form that have to take place. But keeping the structural integrity, or the story integrity, or the character integrity, or hopefully some variation of all of these things, is what's going to help your audience to feel that sense of fullness when they leave the theater after seeing this adaptation.
Yeah, and
so let me, oh, go ahead.
Well, one of the things that theater can do that has an enormous pull in writing is scenery. Mm. You know, yes. We spend a lot of time as writers describing stuff.
Yeah.
And so you have to control the order of presentation, whereas with theater, the audience is going to be looking at the whole stage. So while there is still a cost for theater, the cost comes at a different place and in different ways for the visuals than it does for the visuals in written.
So as we've talked about the this translation process, specifically with regard to Night of Black or Darkness, are there pieces that jump out at you that you were excited to translate, and are there pieces that you threw out?
Okay, so there's a great story involved here, and I'm glad Brandon's not on this podcast because it'll break his little heart.
Oh, yes.
Most of the people who read the book, you ask them what their favorite part was, and they will say the fact discussion.
It's my favorite part.
It's great. It does not work. And this is why it's so important to identify, like Mary said, the iconic elements that make the story function.
We say it does not work on
It does not work on stage. Yeah. It works great in the book, but on stage, A, the form is so much shorter. You're there for an hour, hour and a half. You don't need the plot recapped halfway through, which is part of the purpose of the fact discussion. Another reason is it just simply doesn't read. When you're reading along, you have the freedom. Part of the purpose is that it is intentionally confusing. And that's what makes it kind of funny, is that they're referring to 19 or 20 different things purely by number. And you kind of lose track, and the reader is encouraged to, you know, either flip back and try to figure out, wait, which one is fact five again? That doesn't play on a stage because you don't have that freedom to flip back and forth.
Okay, well, having seen the Blue Man Group show, it occurs to me that the way Blue Man Group would handle something like that is with actual numbers and sign cards being carried around on the stage.
Yes, they would. Yes,
but
yes,
that
yes,
is not would. The play that you guys are making.
If we were doing that sort of a play, I would 100% stick that in and do it with numbers and sign cards, because I am all about that kind of theater. It just doesn't work in this play.
This stage adaptation is going to be somewhat more akin to realism, really.
As much as a play about vampires can be about realism.
With this book.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. We wanted to do realism. We thought, vampires are good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what we had to do then, you know, once Allison pointed that out to me, and I'm like, but I like that part. You know, there's so many darlings that have to be murdered in the process of doing this adaptation.
About
you know, we had to look at that scene and say, well, what's really important about it? And it's not the really funny, confusing conversation. It's the one key decision that they make. And so we just have to make that in a different way that's shorter and plays. Mm-hmm.
So on the subject of murdering darlings.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WX. Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our book of the week this week is Night of Blacker Darkness. Dan, you want to pitch this to us so that they can hear it before the darlings are all dead?
A Night of Blacker Darkness is a book that I self-published a few years ago. You can find it on Audible. You can find the Kindle versions of it and stuff. But it is a historical vampire farce set in 1817 in England, about a man who was trying to steal an inheritance. He is a banker committing bank fraud, and he gets caught, and then he realizes that his scheme is still in motion, but he has to escape. So he escapes from prison in the classical way. He pretends to be dead, gets hauled out in a coffin, and when he gets out of the coffin at the graveyard, somebody sees him and assumes he's a vampire. So he then spends the rest of the book running away from the police, the vampire hunter, the actual vampires, and trying as hard as he can to commit this crime with the help of John Keats and Mary Shelley.
Outstanding. Audiblepodcast.com/excuse. Night of Blacker Darkness by Dan Wells, read by Sean Barrett. You can start a trial membership and have that read to you for free. How do you go about this? We've talked a little bit about the theory. What's in your toolbox? When you need to take something like this and bring it on the stage, and you've already made some decisions about ditching the fact scene, what the theme is, what are your tools for making this work?
There's a lot of tools. You have, like I said, you just have to go through scene by scene. First of all, you have to put it into scenes, mm-hmm. and then you have to go through scene by scene. What's important? What characters are introduced? What information do we learn? There's a lot of things. Something that I toyed with Night of Blacker Darkness what can be condensed into audience address
narrative.
Thank you. Which is something that we do a lot in the children's theater.
Right.
When you take, for instance, Cinderella, which is an hour and a half children's movie, and you take it down into a half an hour long children's play, nearly the entire thing is done in narrative.
Most of them are narrators.
You can cover vast amounts of plot in narration.
And if I can jump in here and translate that for our listeners who are usually writing prose, what she's talking about is that there are times in theater, most of the time you're doing showing in theater, and when you bring in a narrator, you switch to telling. So when we say show, don't tell, this is a prime example of where you can use telling or narration to compress things.
Yeah, time to tell instead.
Yes. Yeah. And you do that in places where you need to convey information and move the plot along
so
that you can get to the part that is actually fun to see.
Mm. Yes, so where Frederick, for instance, the main character, instead of showing him going from the prison to the graveyard and going through that whole process, he could just say, and now I'm in the coffin and I'm going here and doing this. We can just go there very, very quickly. And I toyed with that, but there's so much in the latter half of the book that we want to see and we don't want to be told that it doesn't work very well for this book. I don't think it's going to work.
And I'm going to, if I may jump in on one other thing really quickly, one of the other things that this is useful for all sorts of things is one step that we did not talk about in the adaptation is knowing the size of your theater and your budget.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Because on a Broadway stage with unlimited budget, you would have absolutely been able to show the going from the graveyard, from the jail to the graveyard, because you could have had hydraulics and 50 bajillion stagehands. In a smaller theater for children where you only have half an hour, you cannot afford either the time or the resources.
And even at our small college where we'll be doing this production, I have some resources. I don't have the resources of large Research One universities. So we've got lights and we've got curtains and we have a stage, and I don't have a fly system to fly things in and out, and I don't have hydraulics to lift things up and down, and I don't have a trap door to drop things out of sight.
Oh, trap door.
So this has been a big concern as Allison and I go through the script back and forth, and we listen to the readings and we think, well, how are we going to make this scene change work? Yeah. You know, that is actually a big part of which scenes we use and which scenes we don't use, because we don't have a fly system.
Okay, so that's... I was going to say can of worms, but I'm not can of wormings this for another episode. Dan, they're involving you in this process?
Yes.
You get to play along?
I do. Officially, Allison and I are collaborating on this project.
So how... What is the big difference for you?
From my perspective, it allows us to cheat a little bit more. You know, if I were adapting like Harry Potter for the stage, for example, I would feel more obligated to present it as the author wrote it. Since, given that I am the author and I can adapt it any way I want, Allison and I have made some pretty big decisions.
Huge.
Like, let's remove this location from the story altogether.
You have the luxury to say, this is actually what I meant.
Or this is how I'm going to convey this now. Rather than moving back and forth between London and Bath, we're going to set the entire thing in London, because that makes our scene transitions easier, and that allows us to put in more story and less connective tissue.
Although you do actually do that even when you don't have access to the author.
Yeah, a bit,
which is true. I just feel
we
less guilty about doing it.
Asked earlier about the tools available in doing this adaptation. One of the best tools available to us, because I'm the head of a theater program at a small college with a beginning acting class, is I have a troupe of actors.
Yes.
The cardinal rule of theater, the fundamental truth, is that theater was never meant to be read. It was always meant to be heard. And to be able to sit down with a troupe of actors, one in each role, and doing a reading of this script with Dan on Skype, we were able to let Dan and Allison both
because Shakespeare used Skype.
He totally did.
You bet he did.
Yeah, I hear. FaceTime. Yep.
He spent all of his time in Stratford. Really, you didn't know that.
Skype-spear.
But we were able to allow. I was able to allow Dan and Allison to focus on listening, to these words and to this play by providing them with a troupe of actors.
Yeah, there's also a saying that if an actor, if it is possible for a line to be misinterpreted, the actor will find it.
Oh, yes, and Regency English lines read in the Tennessee accent.
Listening to these kind of some deep Southern accents reading this, it's been fantastic. But as
it
Chris points out,
it is universally acknowledged that a man in possession of good fortune. Sorry.
It's been a great boon
Frederick,
to the process.
Are you really a vampire? How can you be a vampire, Frederick?
Sometimes
wow.
rhymes
Bless his
don't
heart.
Work.
No, he wow. don't have a heart. He's a vampire.
I'm writing a book about Frankenstein.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Okay, so as we're doing these
we are
hopefully bad imitations
right now.
Of these actors. Confession. When I read Night of Blacker Darkness, it didn't strike for me the way it struck for a lot of people. I didn't find it funny enough. And part of that, well, hang on. Part of that is that the way I voiced the dialogue and the jokes and the things in my head was very different from the way Dan was voicing it. So when you say, you know, an actor, if there's a wrong way to read it, an actor will find it. If there was a wrong way to read this book, I probably found a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
When you have actors reading these lines, I guess this is a directorial question. Yep. How do you, you know, in the script, direct them so that the emphasis is on the right syllable and so on and so forth so that the jokes hit?
Part of that then becomes my job. Once the script is done, I'll be directing the production of this that we hope to do in the fall. And part of that then becomes my job. I need to understand authorial intent. I need to understand what the playwrights meant
well,
to do.
And part of before it even gets there is simplifying the stage directions, because he's done really great in the book. His descriptions, I have to simplify that into the stage directions. So instead of his like Percy screams, I don't even know what you wrote, but it goes on for a paragraph of Percy's scream, and I'm just like, Percy screams.
but we're able to take through clarity on their part and through understanding both the text. I need to understand their performance text. I also, part of my responsibility as director, is to understand Dan's original story. I need to know.
Good luck.
Right? I need to know where it came from. I need to understand the original from whence the adaptation was made. And then I need to understand the performance text. And then I need to understand my actors well enough to know how to get them to that end goal. Because if I leave it in their hands, just like if they left it in my hands, by ourselves, I mean, something's bound to go wrong. But through collaboration and through... I very much want Dan and Allison both involved in every facet of this production up to the day we open, to the extent that they can be.
Yeah, and what he's talking about, very quick before we end, that's one of the great benefits of having the cast be able to read this and be able to listen to it. And Allison and I have been doing our best to kind of discern, okay, that line didn't work. Is it because they read it wrong, or is it because that line just doesn't work?
Yes.
And then that's helped us kind of pare it down to what, you know, what it needs to be, the core essence of the show in an hour and a half on
stage. But
what's
very good news is that even the first time these actors held these words in their hands, and the first time they opened their mouths and out of their mouths these words came,
they were laughing.
They were
so
laughing
hard.
At times hard enough that we had to stop and we couldn't
continue.
That's
always a good sign.
Which is a very good sign. Yeah. To me as a director, as the sort of decision maker on programming this play, that was how I knew that this was going to go forward. I didn't need to see a final draft before I can commit to this project moving forward with my company at my little college.
Standing.
Because I know that it's funny enough in the first draft of the adaptation that I could put it straight to the stage.
Yeah. Okay, we are out of time. I want to ask a yes-no can of worms question for Dan. Has this experience of adaptation informed your writing in ways that's going to change the way you write books in the future?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'll say yes, because I've done this, and yes, it has.
Outstanding. Dan, do you have our writing prompt?
I do have the writing prompt. The core idea for this story, for Blacker Darkness, when I started writing it years ago, was let's take vampires and depict them as having all of the weaknesses and none of the strengths of a traditional vampire. And the story kind of grew out of that. So that's your writing prompt. Pick a monster and then write a story in which that monster has all of the weaknesses traditionally associated with it, but none of the strengths that make it powerful.
You are out of excuses. Now go write.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.